Well, on the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom, the historian Henry Louis Gates Jr. wrote this: "I ask that if you teach your children one new name from the heroes of Black history, please let it be Bayard Rustin." An opportunity to learn more about the architect of the March on Washington is now available on the Copenhagen stage. Blueprints to Freedom, an ode to Bayard Rustin, made its world premiere there last week and runs through November 15th. Michael Benjamin Washington is the playwright as well as the actor who portrays Rustin, with numerous acting credits that encompass Broadway and regional theater, as well as TV and film. Mr. Washington is a presidential scholar in the arts and teaches young arts masterclass workshops in Los Angeles. He joins us here this morning. Michael, nice to have you. Welcome.
Thank you, Steve. Glad to be here.
And also with us is Dee Rashawn Gilmore, who currently manages Project IM, a groundbreaking HIV/AIDS awareness and stigma reduction program for the Kansas City Care Clinic. Mr. Gilmore is also the senior field organizer for PROMO, Missouri's statewide LGBT equality and advocacy organization. And Rashawn, nice to have you too. Welcome.
Great to be here, Steve. Thank you.
Well, Michael, start us off here. Bayard was an activist all his life. As a gay African-American male devoted to nonviolence, he was a supporter of many causes. Do you remember when you first became aware of him?
Yeah, I was doing a workshop of a new play by Terrell Alva McCraney called Choir Boy, which dealt with the 16-year-old openly gay Black kid at a prep school. We were doing it at Manhattan Theater Club for Lynn Meadows and reading it. It had been commissioned. And at the end of the reading, the director Kent Gash had told me, you know, you're a little long in the tooth to be playing 16, but I think you should look at Bayard Rustin. And I said, who's that?
Really?
I got that look of, oh, you should know who that is. So I ordered a documentary called Brother Outsider. It took a year to get to me. I was in Los Angeles doing a series, and right when the series got canceled, I asked a simple prayer, what do I do next? And I don't believe in coincidences, but the cellophane wrapped DVD fell off my shelf to my feet, and I put it in. I watched it.
No kidding.
I promise you.
That's a story, Michael.
Well, I'm telling it to you, Steve.
Yeah, that's pretty good. And you saw it, and the light bulb went off. This is something that you had to do.
Absolutely. When I saw the man's story, one, I wondered why I never had heard of him. Two, I wondered how it would be possible for me to tell his story in some kind of human way that could attract the masses as his life did. Bayard was very, very well known for his intersectionality on women's rights, gay rights, eradicating poverty, helping the children, the future generations, unionizing Negro labor at the time.
Yeah.
It just spanned so many things, and I wondered how and why it hadn't been theatricalized.
Well, Michael Benjamin Washington hadn't heard of this man. Why? I mean, what's your theory?
It's just we have 28 days in February during Black History Month, and we usually focus on I Have a Dream, but nobody ever talks about the man who told Martin Luther King where to stand, when to stand, and what to say to whom, and how to get the people there to listen. So I wanted to know who was the mastermind behind that great day, which has been called America's Finest Hour, where we all stood together, Black and white, poor and rich, all for the cause of eradicating poverty and helping to raise the minimum wage, all the same issues that are happening now in 2015.
Well, Rashawn, what about you and what's your story here? How did you learn about Mr. Rustin?
Similar to Michael's story, I learned about him.
Oh, come on. The thing fell off the shelf.
Well, I didn't have that exact experience.
Yeah.
But thanks to our library system, they were putting on a premiere of the movie when it first came out. And it was at the Bluford Library branch on 31st and Prospect. And a young lady there, a librarian, a German immigrant, had learned of Bayard some years earlier, knew of his impact on the civil rights movement, and specifically as a mentor and big brother to Dr. King. And so every year she put on a production where she talked about Bayard and played the movie. And last year, Bayard's former partner, Walter Nagel, came to Kansas City and talked to a room full of people about Bayard and his work.
I would like to have met him. Yeah.
It was just phenomenal to get those firsthand stories and experiences from someone who lived with him and knew him both from the public eye, but also in private life. And so there was a very different perspective than you might just get from things you might read or see about Bayard.
So the two of you are sort of sprinkling little cupcakes here about the importance of this man and what he did. Let's bring it together. What did he do? What was his role in the civil rights movement? How pivotal was he, Michael?
Well, I think, first of all, he was what is called a great strategist and an architect of the civil rights movement.
Yeah.
And the fact that he was a great organizer. He knew how to bring all of these disparate minds together. and to say that, hey, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. is going to be a star in the making. He needs a platform to speak from. So Byard helped co-found the Southern Christian Leadership Conference so that he would have a letterhead. He would have an actual platform to speak from.
He created a platform, in a sense.
Yes, absolutely.
Smart move. Yeah.
Absolutely. I think Byard understood what his lane was. He knew as an openly gay man who didn't necessarily promote his sexuality, but he never hid it, which I find to be the most admirable quality in the 1940s and 1950s and 60s. He then worked with A. Philip Randolph, the great trade unionist, to first of all do a march in 1941, which didn't happen when they were trying to get President Roosevelt to integrate the Defense Department during wartime, because Roosevelt had so much respect for A. Philip Randolph and knew that this march was in the planning. He passed the Fair Employment Act, which therefore allowed my grandfather, Lyman Washington Sr., a sergeant in World War II, to be living on integrated bases, so that my father, who's a colonel in the United States Army and fought in Vietnam, saw his father vote, which I didn't know until I went home to Texas and brought home the documentary along with Ben Kingsley and Moses. And I sat my parents down, who've been married for 40 years, and I'm like, do you think black people have reached the promised land of milk and honey? 6 hours later, a couple of bottle of wines later, I found out all of this stuff about the legacy of my, you know, the Washington men in the Army.
And the impact on your own family.
Absolutely. So it became very personal to me at that point.
Rashaan, what would you add to Rustin's achievements and contributions here?
I think the singular achievement that comes to mind is, of course, the planning for the March on Washington for Jobs.
Which is the focus of the production,
Absolutely. But I think there's another element to Byard Rustin that is often overlooked because he was, as Michael said, sort of in the background. He never made it to the forefront in a lot of ways. And that had a lot to do with his sexuality. But he was also, beyond a mastermind, an influencer and a mentor. So he is actually the one who introduced Dr. King to the teachings of Mahatma Gandhi and nonviolent resistance. And a lot of people don't know that. We think that that's just part of Dr. King's upbringing.
That's
and the
what
person.
He was, yeah.
Yeah, but it was actually Byard who had that influence. But it was not without its controversy as well within the black community and within the broader community. In fact, it was Adam Clayton Powell, the famed Harlem congressman, African-American congressman, who went to Dr. King and told him that if you do not fire Byard Rustin, I'm going to start a rumor that you guys are having a sexual affair.
He wanted to say that. Why? He made that threat. Why?
He was, I believe, threatened by, for a couple of reasons, politically, I think, in his own influence, one. But I also think, too, because it was seen as a scourge.
Yeah.
And that would be a black eye on the movement. And Byard had a colored past in the sense that, and so Michael and I were talking about this in the green room earlier, that in 1940s California, Byard was discovered by a police officer to have been in the backseat of a car with two friends, scantily clad, and having a little tryst, and that made the papers. And so that was used as leverage against Dr. King, and Byard was very hurt by that. There was a fracture in their relationship. He went to Dr. King and said, I don't want to hurt the movement. I'll offer my resignation, and Dr. King accepted. And so for a very long time, they were not in communication, and it was A. Philip Randolph who sort of rescued Byard again and brought him in and later reconnected with Dr. King.
You know, how much would you pay to have been, you know, fly on the wall at the moment that Rustin begins to talk to Martin Luther King Jr. about this guy named Gandhi over there across the seas, wherever he is in that country called India doing his thing? And what a moment that would have been. And seeing the light bulb perhaps going off in King's head, though, that's the future. That's where I want to be.
Well, and especially because at the time, Dr. King, we think of him as this very mature older man, this sort of elder statesman of civil rights, but he was in his late 20s and early 30s when he was really at the height of the movement. And so for him, this was like a light bulb moment to hear about Gandhi. And bear in mind, we didn't have all the things that we have today in terms of social media and the internet that makes, you know, that information travel so quickly. So there were a lot of hours. And the movie Selma does do a fairly decent job of, you know, an homage to Byard and his role with Dr. King. But yeah, I would have I'd give my left arm for that experience.
Yeah. Well, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date. We're talking about the contributions of Bayard Rustin, one of Martin Luther King's top lieutenants in the civil rights movement, and his contributions. Production that talks about all of this is now underway. Blueprints to Freedom, an ode to Bayard Rustin, is playing now in the Copagan stage and runs through November 15th. Tickets, just go to the rep, and you can get a whole lot more information there. Well, Bayard's relationship with King began in 1956 when he went to Montgomery to support Dr. King and the bus boycott there. He went on to help King organize, you mentioned the SLIC, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, yet despite all of Bayard's work, you know, King, he did end up distancing himself from Rustin. How painful was that for Rustin at that point in his life? What do we know about that?
He described it as the lowest point of his life.
I can imagine.
Someone who was like a younger brother to him. And I think for him, it also brought into question his role within the movement. And I think that he felt displaced as well as despondent for a good long time. But again, I think I certainly thought this growing up, that Dr. King had this idea for a really great speech. He needed to get a bunch of people together, and he's going to give this I Have a Dream speech. And nothing could be further from the truth. The planning for the March on Washington was already happening. With A. Philip Randolph, as Michael rightly said, this was the second run at it, and Bayard Rustin. And again, they didn't have phone systems like we have today and the internet and other things that allowed them to plan and organize the hundreds of thousands of people that were there. So I think Bayard knew at a certain point he had to move forward regardless. The movement was bigger than just his relationship with Dr. King, and that it had to go forward. But he was greatly elated to have been restored years later.
Michael, what did King want the March on Washington to be? What did Rustin want it to be? And how did that match up with what eventually came to be?
Well, because it was A. Philip Randolph's original vision in 1941 and part of his great regret that it didn't happen, Blueprints to Freedom picks up where that regret is being cleared. Mm-hmm. So when you come to the Copagan stage to see the show, you'll see that Bayard Rustin really wanted to do this as a tribute to A. Philip Randolph, who wanted to do it as a tribute to the ancestors. Mm-hmm. To 100 years after the Emancipation Proclamation had been signed, the freedom of black people in this country still had not been ensured. Mm-hmm. So if we took this wonderful, drastic, dramatic, yet elegant gesture to the government, we wanted to finally have the Civil Rights Bill passed. Therefore, after that, the Voting Rights Act passed. It was a series of legislation that needed to occur. So it wasn't so much as a symbolic gesture as it was a tactic to get the Constitution revised in our favor.
And how much did Rustin actually help in the organization and King's great speech? What was the connection there?
Complete control over the entire day.
Even the speech?
Martin Luther King had done a round of I Have a Dream before.
Yes.
In Detroit.
Which is not well known in many times. People aren't aware of that.
Mm-hmm. Many people on Dr. King's staff felt that the dream speech was too soft. If you have a chance to go to the government and stand on the front lawn of the president, why are you going to talk about this metaphor? And what Bayard Rustin encouraged him to do is that's exactly what we need to do in line with what A. Philip Randolph wants. Now, Bayard Rustin was much more of a protester. Let's kick up the ruckus. Let's make them nervous. He wanted it to be a 3-day event. Let's have, let's sit on Congress and have a sleepover until they... And Mr. Randolph requested it has to be a 1-day demonstration so that we can show the government that we are not only worthy of the things that we're asking, we're prepared to lead them into that direction as we shift from protesting into politics.
And the conversations about the speech, the I Have a Dream speech, give us a little more on what transpired there, Michael.
Well, I think Dr. King wanted to know what would be the most elegant gesture that would still be in line with what he did. Martin Luther King was the greatest orator I think we've probably ever known of the past 3 generations. His mastery of words was so masterful. And what he was able to convey in that was a sense of multi-generations, that we have a responsibility to the ancestors, but we also have a responsibility to the future generations. Mm-hmm. Black, white, together, standing. But at the same time, it was necessary for all of us to stand up and join hands and do that. Meaning, how do we shift the moderate, particularly white American, into activism? How do we stand up for each other and insist on change?
Yeah. Rashad, I'm wondering, Rustin did stand up and speak to the public that day. What did he do?
I think he is what might be the modern version of what's called the hype man. He really wanted the crowd to understand the importance of that day. And Byard was a very aspirational person. He wanted to encourage people, you know, a lot of people don't know he was a Quaker. And Byard wanted to encourage people to sort of achieve their best selves and bring others along with them. And I think that day he had that moment. I think if anything said or showed what it meant to him that day, it was when he talked to everyone that day about who you are to the world. And I think that was in a way that people hadn't thought about themselves before. We see ourselves as very individual, but not how we are all connected. And Byard's message always was, we are one. Mm-hmm. And he drilled that point home that day.
You know, Michael, how do you portray in the production Blueprints to Freedom, an ode to Byard Rustin, King's speech, a huge mass of people on the mall in Washington? Mm-hmm. How do you deal with that in your production?
Well, the play deals with the 2 months that Byard had leading up to the march and all of the slings and arrows that he faced during that. We do stop by the March on Washington. And without giving anything away, it had to be grand. And I think it is about as grand as it can get. My collaborator, my projection designer, John Naran, who has worked for Madonna and Ricky Martin during stadium shows.
Oh, you got tricks up your sleeve
here.
Oh,
yeah. You have to.
No kidding.
It's America's finest hour. And if it's the theater, that means we have permission to blow it out. And so,
absolutely.
So we have a really good time. And audiences have been clamoring. So you have to come and see it, Steve.
I'd like to come see it. And without giving anything away, this sounds like this was something to pull off.
Oh, yes.
A feat has been achieved here.
Absolutely, it was for him. I mean, I figured if he did all of that in 2 months with just index cards in the back of his pocket, what could we do with the internet, computer, phones, cell phones, texting? You know, I had no excuse. And so we've done everything that we possibly can to honor this man. And that day,
when Rustin left Washington and that day was over, and when King left Washington and that day was over, how satisfied were they, Rashawn, with what had transpired there?
To be completely honest, I don't think that Byard was satisfied. Mm-hmm. He had sort of this insatiable appetite for progress. And so I think he was able to look at the day and say, mission accomplished. You know, you sort of tick that one off. And it was a lot of work over a very short period of time. And as you said, it was a feat. But I don't think for Byard that he felt like, okay, we have demonstrably moved the needle. For him, it was always push, 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 right up to the day he died. And when he wasn't pushing here in the States, he was overseas, pushing as well. So Byard is just one of those kind of people who was so driven that they often don't take time to celebrate their accomplishments. Mm-hmm. Because if you do, there's the risk of complacency, I think. And so he always wanted the next thing.
Well, here's a loaded one for you, Michael. What do you think he would think of America today?
I think he would be proud that we have somehow gotten over some of the stigmas that we've placed on each other. Mm-hmm. He was very much, as Rashad said, an inclusive person. He wanted the collective mm-hmm. force of America to become one, very much about the progression of humanity. And I think he would be disappointed that 50 years later, a lot of the same issues, the minimum wage, women's rights, equal pay for equal work, eradicating poverty, a lot of those things have still not been not only solved, but not a lot of progression has been made. I think he would be at the forefront of it, but I think he would be very happy about where the gay rights movement has been able to progress to being able to get married in all 50 states when he himself had to adopt his partner of 10 years in order for him to have legal benefits at the end of his life. But I think that he would, as he was a very positive person, and so he understood how to incite people into wanting to effect change. Mm-hmm. So I think that he would be here as a cheerleader for, we've come far, but there is still miles to go before we rest.
I just have to say, I think that Byard Rustin would be at the forefront of the Black Lives Matter movement. I think mm-hmm. he would be very actively engaged. And it's interesting, he was sort of the kernel for this modern or postmodern civil rights movement because it looks so different. I mean, he was this openly gay man sort of behind the scenes pushing then. But if you look at the Black Lives Matter movement, you have three black women, who two of whom are lesbians, who are leading that movement. And I think that all the things that were such a big part of the civil rights movement of old, if you will, the respectability politics, you know, the sort of conservative views about certain things, have all been eschewed, and it's come as you are, and let's have a voice. And to do as Byard said, you have to bring society to a stop to make people pay attention.
And Michael, just quickly, we're talking about Byard through the lens of race. What about through the lens of sexuality and how he would view America today in terms of its openness to gay Americans?
Well, I think he would say that we've made progress, but of course there is still the stigmatas, and homophobia has not really been squelched. It's been more contained. It's been more politely discussed. But I do think that there have been great advancements made. And Byard was very much about not labeling. He didn't actually join the gay rights movement until towards the end of his life in the 1980s because of the great detriment it had against him during the civil rights movement. Again, he never hid his sexuality. He always was who he was, but he never promoted it until the very end of his life when his partner really urged him into standing up for gay rights. And so when he never wanted to do these labels or had some issues with black studies or things that would divide us into labeling versus being the collective, I think in terms of sexuality, he would be pleased, but would be pushing us further. Mm-hmm. Byard was somebody who was never, ever able to settle for what is. He's like, this is what we have now. This is a good advancement. Now, how do we push ourselves over the next hill?
Indeed.
Because there's going to be another hill and another hill and another hill.
Well, that's the voice of Michael Benjamin Washington, who's the playwright as well as the actor who plays Bayard Rustin in this production. He was joined today by Rashawn Gilmore, currently manages Project IM, this groundbreaking HIV, AIDS awareness and stigma reduction program for the Kansas City Care Clinic. Thanks so much, gentlemen.
Thank you for having us, Steve.
Thanks for the show.
Blueprints to Freedom, an ode to Bayard Rustin, is playing now on the Copacan stage. It runs through November 15th.